So here come the U.S. tariffs on European metal. We'll explore the deeper economic and political context. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. With the Trump team now on track to imposing the 25% penalty on steel from Europe and 10% on aluminum from Europe, what does this mean for global economic relations? If the announcement does come today as expected, there will be retaliation. More on that in a moment. But first, the deeper context. Ian Bremmer is founder of the Eurasia Group, a political risk consulting company based in New York. Good morning, Ian.
David, good morning.
What do you think? Did the Europeans expect that the U.S. would actually go through with these tariffs?
The Europeans knew it was a possibility, and it's hard to negotiate with the European Union as a collective. They ultimately were willing to provide some benefits to the United States, but there wasn't a lot of flexibility, and they couldn't get to a deal, and so we don't have permanent exemptions.
So this means war? Trade war?
No, but it means the transatlantic relationship is in disarray. I mean, look, we just had in 1 week meetings by the German chancellor and the French president to the White House. They could not have gone worse. They came away with absolutely nothing, both on Iran deal and on trade negotiations. Merkel doesn't have a good relationship with Trump personally. Macron absolutely does. It didn't matter. I've spoken to the ambassadors. I've spoken with ministers from the countries. They are enormously, I would say, upset to despondent about the state of relations with the United States more broadly right now. And trade's just one manifestation of that.
But talks could continue. Just because tariffs are now being assessed doesn't mean that the talking stops.
Of course not. And we're still allies. It's not like they're leaving NATO and we're still all in the WTO. But the actual relationship between these leaders, the individuals and the administrations around them is pretty broken right now. I mean, if anything, I'd say that the bilateral engagement between Trump and China's Xi Jinping is probably more constructive on a day-to-day basis right now than the engagement between Trump and most of the European allies.
All right. So public sector tensions, essentially, but in the private sector, corporations, they're still doing business across the Atlantic here?
I mean, you know, in a sense, easy for Americans and Europeans to continue doing business together in the private sector. But in the public sector, the transatlantic relationship was the bedrock on which globalization was really constructed. It's the post-war order. It doesn't feel that way anymore. And the idea that there's trust and common values between our governments, that isn't enough. That doesn't move the needle. I mean, ultimately, Trump's a unilateralist in his approach to foreign policy. He views allies as challenges to be overcome, and he thinks American power should get these guys all in line. And at least on this trade issue right now, that hasn't moved either side one bit.
Ian Bremmer is founder of the political risk consultancy, the Eurasia Group. Ian, always good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, sir.
For U.S. steel workers and producers, there will be celebration. For U.S. companies that use steel and aluminum, from beer cans to car panels, there's concern. And the Europeans are set to penalize some American exports. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer is following this from Washington. Let's bring her in live. Nancy, let's get practical. Which American-made things will the EU make tougher to sell over there?
David, they've been very clear about that. A few months ago, the EU released a 10-page list of U.S. products it would slap tariffs on in retaliation for the U.S. steel and aluminum tariffs. The EU appears to be targeting some products for political reasons, like bourbon from Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's home state of Kentucky. Also on the list, U.S. orange juice, cranberries, and cigarettes, ovens and stainless steel sinks. There have been some reports the EU would actually stagger these tariffs, dividing the products it's targeting into two groups, applying tariffs of up to 25% on the first group right away, but waiting on the second group.
Nancy, any sense of the scale of this?
Well, there have been a number of estimates. The Wall Street Journal reports the EU would levy tariffs on more than $3 billion worth of U.S. products. But keep in mind, trade in goods and services between the U.S. and the EU is worth more than $1 trillion a year. So this wouldn't be the end of that trade. And Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross has said trade negotiations with the EU can continue. But keep in mind, the Trump administration is also considering a new tariff on imported cars, and that's really upset the EU.
All right, Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer in Washington. Thank you for that. Let's check the markets, the numbers. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are mixed to little change. It's the S&P future that's little changed at the moment. The Dow future is which direction? It's it's down less than a tenth percent. The volatile euro this week is up slightly. With the dollar down, a euro costs $1.16.8 at the moment. The FTSE in London is up a tenth of a percent. We recently heard from Fran in New York, New York, who wanted to let us know that she appreciates Marketplace's in-depth reporting and that we help her better understand the economic and political issues of the day. To join Fran in supporting trustworthy, objective journalism, donate online at marketplace.org. Thanks to all the Marketplace investors who make our work possible. Tomorrow, June 1st, Arkansas will become the first state to adopt a big change to its Medicaid program to see the doctor, maybe fill a prescription or get an X-ray. Some people in the health program for low-income Americans will now have to do one of these things: work, look for work, or train for a job 80 hours a month. If they don't, they could be kicked out of the program until next year. From our health desk at WHYY in Philadelphia, Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein reports.
Medicaid critics complain that guaranteed health care breeds complacency. Dr. Joe Thompson with the Arkansas Center for Healthcare Improvement says supporters believe this work requirement experiment will lead to better health and upward social mobility.
It ties a social goal with actually a health insurance function. And the outcome of that, I think, is difficult to predict.
Indiana, Kentucky, and New Hampshire have also gotten the green light from Washington on work requirements, with a handful of other states pending. Research shows well over half of people nationwide who could be subject to the new policy already work. The Urban Institute's Anuj Gangopadhyay says the people in Arkansas who don't work have challenges meeting the new obligation.
Whether enrollees have internet access, whether they have vehicle access, whether they have a serious health limitation.
Critics see work requirements, like those in Arkansas, as a burden that will force people out of Medicaid and leave them sicker. I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.
Exempt from the work requirements, people with a disability, those with dependent children or pregnant, and people over 50. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.